Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guest today is Stacy Malkin. Stacy is the author of Not Just a Pretty Face, The Ugly Side of the Beauty Industry, and co-founder of the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics. Our topic today is the health risks of personal care products. If you've got questions or comments you'd like to ask, why don't you give us a call in Anchorage. Our number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And you can email us directly at lineone, lineone, at kska.org. Besides Stacy, I also have another guest I'm just going to briefly mention, and that is Garen Tarr. Garen is the director of the Alliance for Reproductive Justice, and she's had some part to play in the reason Stacy's in Alaska and Anchorage and on the program today. So, Garen, you want to tell us about that?
Sure. Thank you so much, Dr. Woodard. It's a real pleasure to be here today. We're so excited to have Stacy joining us and have her here in Alaska. I'm working with Alliance for Reproductive Justice and Alaska Community Action on Toxics, and we're working together on an environmental and reproductive health speaker series. Stacy's one of our guest speakers in this series, and hoping to educate Alaskans about the links between chemicals in our environment and reproductive health. And turns out some of the chemicals that Stacy will be talking about today are linked to some adverse reproductive health effects. So we're hoping to have a great turnout tonight for a talk she's going to give. She'll talk more about that, and we'll keep in touch with Alaskans in the coming months about the speakers we'll have as a part of the series. So thanks so much for having us today.
Okay. Yeah, it's our pleasure. Thanks very much. I also should just mention in the fair balance kind of category here is the Alaska Community for Action on Toxics and the Alliance for Reproductive Justice are both non-profit kind of clients for KSKA. Stacy, how'd you get interested in this big, broad topic to begin with?
Well, I was a big fan of cosmetics when I was a teenager back in the 80s. And as I wrote in my book, I was quite obsessed with 17 magazine. I used lots of beauty products. I never really thought at all about what was in the products that I was putting on my body until many years later. And my background is that I was a reporter for about 10 years, and then I went to work for environmental health groups about 10 years ago. And so I was working with some of the leading researchers and advocates in the field of environmental health when we decided to research this question about what's in the products that we're all putting on our bodies every day.
So did you go to these people that are involved in environmental health as part of what you were doing as a reporter? Is that how you got into that to begin with? Or?
Well, I started to learn about the problem of chemicals when I was a reporter and investigating some situations that were going on, in which it was clear to me as a reporter that government officials really had very little information about health effects of chemicals that were being sprayed in public places. Later, when I went to work for, I worked for a group called Healthcare Without Harm that does sustainability projects with healthcare, and we were concerned about certain chemical exposures in the hospital setting. Mm-hmm. And we were concerned about a particular chemical called phthalates, which a long and robust body of data, mostly from animal studies, shows that phthalates can cause reproductive harm to males. They see a whole suite of effects to animals exposed to phthalates, particularly while in the womb, such as birth defects of the penis, undescended testicles, lowered sperm counts, and fertility problems.
Where have we heard of phthalates recently? It seems like that's a name that keeps coming up.
It's big in the news. They were banned recently from toys in the United States, which is great. But unfortunately, the truth is if we want to protect children from phthalates, we need to also keep them away from women of childbearing age. And why we started to look at cosmetics actually was because research from the Centers for Disease Control found that women aged 20 to 40 had higher levels of phthalates in their bodies. And we wondered why might that be. Phthalates are found in vinyl shower curtains, your like stinky vinyl shower curtain smell, car seats, toys, medical devices, etc. What was new that we discovered in 2002 is that phthalates are also very widely used in cosmetics. So we did a study called Not Too Pretty, where we analyzed dozens of personal care products and found that the majority of them contain phthalates, but the chemical wasn't listed on the label.
Certainly, we want to spend the bulk of our time talking about these individual health concerns, but I also want to kind of bring us back to how you got into this a little bit deeper. And you were telling us you were involved with some environmental health issues and got into that a little bit deeper. Is that when the campaign for safe cosmetics came about? It sounds like you really got into this in a big way.
Yes, it really has become my life's work, which I never expected. When we did the study on phthalates in 2002, it got a lot of attention. It was the first time anyone had really reported on cosmetics and what was in them. And there was so much interest from environmental groups and media, the community. And so we decided at that point to form the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics, which is a national coalition of environmental and health groups. And we're headquartered in San Francisco at the Breast Cancer Fund. So since then, for about the last 8 years, we've done a huge amount of research into this question of what's in the products we put on our bodies. And not just makeup, but it's important to point out, we're also talking about shampoos, deodorants, lotions, shaving cream, baby shampoos. Unfortunately, many of these products contain chemicals that are linked to cancer, reproductive harm, allergies, asthma, and other health problems.
And then the book sounds like, if I read the beginning of that pretty carefully, that's where you even took this even another step and wrote a book about some of the work that the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics was involved in.
Yeah, so I was working as a communication specialist for the environmental groups, but I always had also my hat as a reporter, and I was realizing that the story I was living, seeing the research that was coming out, the interactions that we were having with the companies, the way the public was reacting, it was such a fascinating story, and it hadn't been told. And so that's really why I wrote the book. We have a lot of ugly side of the beauty stories to tell through our work.
Let me remind our listeners once again, if you've got questions or comments about the program today, there's a couple of ways you can reach us directly at Line One. You can just email us at LINEONE. Please spell it out at KSKA.org. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our direct line in Anchorage, 550-8433. Please remember, we're here from 2 to 3. We also rebroadcast tonight from 7 to 8. So if you're listening between 7 and 8, you're going to have to not have answers to your questions. So 550-8433. So what about, I'm a pediatrician. Let's talk about baby products.
So
what should I worry about?
Well, we did a study in 2009 where we sent dozens of top-selling children's bath products and baby shampoos to a lab to have them tested. And we found out that many of the products contained formaldehyde and 1,4-dioxane. And both of those chemicals are known carcinogens, and they also were not listed on the labels. And so a lot of people were surprised. We found those in many of the most popular bath products on the market. And parents were outraged because they felt like they had a right to know. Now, it's not disputed that we found those chemicals in the products. What the companies have said is it's just low levels of carcinogens. The surprising thing was we're finding the same carcinogens in so many products, many of which a kid could be using in one bath. You know, baby shampoo, bubble bath, body wash.
Well, let's at least flesh out a little bit of this idea of the presence of carcinogens. So there's formaldehyde in houses. It used to be a big deal in press board. I'm actually not very familiar with how that's been handled. So we're definitely exposed all the time, and my understanding is that there are federal agencies that are monitoring and also scientists that are trying to figure out what are acceptable levels. So could you put all this into some kind of perspective for us?
Sure. And the story of formaldehyde in wood particle board is a good example, because what's happened is it's been banned from those products in Europe and other countries, China and Japan, but it's still legal in the U.S. And so what's happening is there are basically two different manufacturing streams for wood particle board kitchen cabinets and those types of products. A lot of it's made in China. But they're making formaldehyde-free stuff that goes to Europe, goes to China and Japan, and then the formaldehyde-containing products to the United States. So the fact is, and this is the same situation with personal care products, companies already know how to make the products without the formaldehyde. And it is a known carcinogen, and I think it's just prudent to avoid formaldehyde exposure, especially for kids, whenever possible.
What about the argument that, my understanding, and we've done several programs on different kinds of toxic issues, is that toxicity really is a relative dose issue. I've used examples when talking to families about things that, you know, I could make someone sick with enough water. People make, you know, look at me like I'm crazy, but there is such a thing as water intoxication. So you can make people sick with the a right amount of just about anything. So how does that fit in with this idea of what we should, how should we approach this idea of exposure, I guess is what I'm getting at.
So what we know about formaldehyde is a carcinogen. Now, many of the studies are done on high doses to workers. And so an argument could be, well, these are low doses. I'm not sure the studies are being done on repetitive low-dose exposures to children in a bathtub. There are no studies like that required. Companies in the personal care products industry don't have to assess the safety of the chemicals they use in that way. But also another important point about formaldehyde is that it's also a pretty potent allergen. So some subset of children are allergic to it and will have reactions. And they do have reactions at the levels at which we find the chemical in personal care products. And you'll hear from parents, some parents are well familiar with their child being having reactions to things like Johnson's baby shampoo or other popular bubble baths, and that's could be why, because of a formaldehyde sensitivity.
And the different preservatives and fragrances in particular are known to be specific allergens in particular.
Correct.
All right, we have a caller. Let's take Kaylin. You're on line one.
Hi. I wanted to ask about if personal care products and children's products have sell-by dates or use-by dates like dairy products?
They do, yes, and it's usually a couple of years of a shelf life, which is why some of the companies are using pretty harsh preservatives like formaldehyde releasers. But there are ways to preserve products and have a long shelf life without using formaldehyde preservatives or other things like parabens that are also a concern.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks for your call. Here's an email, and it's a little long, so I'm trying to read it and stay in the program, but I think it asks some reasonable questions here. Could you comment on the use of petroleum products in beauty and skincare products? I find that they are so ubiquitous that it's very hard to avoid them, even in, quote, natural, unquote, products like Aveeno. And for vehicles in many medicinal ointments, over-the-counter and prescription. Does the use of these chemicals present any risk to users? And also, do you do products like mineral oil and petrolatum have any provide any benefit? I'm convinced that they are not any benefit. They don't benefit the skin at all and possibly cause harm. But my mom is convinced that they are useful, at least as a barrier to keep moisture in the skin. I've been unable to find any real answer to the questions anywhere, and I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Yes, this is a big issue. Many of the chemicals in personal care products are derived from petroleum. And, you know, oil is a substance that we can do a lot of beneficial things with in our society, but our bodies can't process it. We can't use it as food. And so, to me, it's not surprising that oil-based chemicals can cause some reaction in our bodies. And we do see that many of the chemicals are linked to long-term health effects or short-term health effects such as allergies and skin problems. We do have a database where you can look up particular products like the mineral oils and the Vaseline, which I do think those are problematic, yes. And on our database, which is called Skin Deep, and you can find it at safecosmetics.org, you can actually look up particular products or also chemicals, and it will tell you what the government and academic sources have to say about the hazard. And it ranks products actually from 0 to 10. So you can really find out a lot about what's in your products, what the toxicity concerns are of these petrochemicals, and also how to find safer alternatives.
As a pediatrician who's done a lot of asthma work and therefore allergies, I'm familiar with the issue of eczema and dry skin. And a lot of the, I think, more respected dermatologists will absolutely like people to not use any product with fragrances and preservatives. However, petrolatum, is a commonly used product because it is so good at holding moisture in the skin, particularly after a bath. I mean, what we're normally telling people is you have to soak and trap. Putting moisturizers on dry skin is probably not very helpful. So I'm a little concerned that there is concern about something like Vaseline because I understood it is very little in the way of other additives to that particular product.
Well, a lot of the petroleum products do have contamination issues is one of the things that we've found. So you can find things in there that aren't actually listed on the label, like the 1,4-dioxane. That's how a lot of the products become contaminated with 1,4-dioxane. So I do think it's important to really look at what we're putting on the skin. And the other issue is what else is it trapping in? I mean, your skin it's important for your skin to be able to also release toxicants as well.
Yep. It does do some benefit. I mean, so I guess it brings up the issue of risk versus benefit. Always tell my patients there is no risk-free alternative out there, and most of these people with dry skin have tremendous discomfort with itch and secondary infection and so forth. And often they've put on lots of other products that do clearly increase the risk of allergy. Now, you see people putting peanut oil and coconut oils, and that may be a way that the allergens to those particular food products are entering our system to stimulate our immune system. So I'm not sure there's a good option other than trying to moisturize the skin. So there's that risk people need to be aware of that if they don't do something too.
Yeah, I definitely use skin moisturizer. I have switched to a lot of the more natural products, though, with fewer chemicals. You bring up a really good point about the allergies and sensitivities, because a lot of times, oftentimes advice coming from dermatologists can be to either use more products or have steroid kind of applications or treatments. When you're often looking at an allergy to either a food or could be a chemical sensitivity. And so sometimes, adding products to broken out skin, for example, or, covering up some kind of skin issue could actually be exacerbating the problem.
What about the use of the term organic? Does that supply us with any assurances?
Unfortunately, no. There are no legal standards for organic personal care products or natural or even the use of words like hypoallergenic. And that's different than the food industry, which does have legal standards for organic. So that's confusing to a lot of people. They think if it says organic, it must be. But you really have to look at the label, not just the marketing claims. Look at what's actually in the product and look for, look and see if your supposedly organic product has a bunch of synthetic chemicals. Sometimes that is the case, but not always. There are some excellent organic products out there. Anything with the USDA organic seal is very good. And products even that don't have it, but again, you just have to look at the ingredients in the product and not just the label claims.
It sounds like it's a process that's a little bit like even the organic foods. It's a marketing ploy because it's very comfortable for many of the public to think that there is some benefit there, and it gets thrown on as a sales technique more than anything.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the companies recognize that consumers want natural and less toxic products. And actually, the market for natural and organic personal care products has been growing faster than sales of conventional products. So companies are certainly paying attention to that. The problem is now it's very easy for them to confuse us with marketing claims, and they all do use words like healthy and pure and for sensitive skin. And we find some of the worst allergens in products with those label claims. And so that's why we really need to also change the law. The cosmetics industry is one of the least regulated industries, certainly under FDA. They have no authority to require safety assessments of products of any kind. It's not required that companies list everything on the label. And it's legal to use nearly any ingredient, whereas many chemicals have been banned in Europe from cosmetics, but you'll find them on the shelves in the U.S. So there's clearly a lot of room for improvement, but changing the law is a key way. And we do have a bill that was introduced, the Safe Cosmetics Act, into the U.S. Congress in 2010. It's going to be reintroduced into the new Congress soon and also hopefully into the Senate this year. So I really urge folks to support the Safe Cosmetics Act, and you can find out more about it on our website at safecosmetics.org.
And that link, and also to Not Just a Pretty Face, Stacy's book, are both on our websites at ksk.org/line1. If you go to that, you can get those links very easily. Let me remind our listeners again, our local number, 550-8433. 550-8433, and you can email us at line1@ksk.org, and our email address, that is our email address, our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. As far as the regulations go, that's pretty much, it's a federally regulated, these products. Is there any differences between states in the ability, in the oversight?
Well, the federal regulation is from 1938, so it's quite a long time. We've learned a few things since then, and I think it's a high time for an update, and even the cosmetics industry is agreeing that the federal law needs to be updated. So that is the key battle. There is a law in California, the Safe Cosmetics Act, that's slightly better than any other laws. It requires companies to notify the state if they're using known carcinogens or reproductive toxins. They don't have to necessarily notify consumers, but they have to tell the state, and the state is building a database that will be available to the public.
Let's go back just briefly, if you don't mind, to this natural and organic titles and names that are put on products. So it really, the message, it sounds to me, is that you've got to be aware that companies are trying to sell their product and that they're going to do their best to make their product stand out and be different from their competitors. And what you're saying is that what's on those in big, broad letters, bright letters sometimes, may not be what's in the package.
Correct. And this is a pretty widespread issue in the beauty industry. You know, we're promised that products can erase years from our lives, and clinical trials prove that wrinkles will disappear, and natural, organic, for sensitive skin, all of this. Great marketing. Not any reflection of reality. No standards.
So you have to look at those labels. And you mentioned already that it doesn't even, everything that's in there doesn't have to be mentioned.
Correct, right. There are two huge loopholes in labeling law. Companies don't have to tell us what's in the fragrance, and that is likely to be a dozen or more chemicals, often contains phthalates. That's why the phthalates were in so many products, they were hiding in the fragrance. And then the second loophole is the contaminants or byproducts, and so formaldehyde, which is coming from a formaldehyde-releasing preservative, which is well known to release formaldehyde. That's why it's in there, is because formaldehyde acts as a preservative. But it's under a name like quaternium 15 versus formaldehyde, which a lot of people recognize and would want to avoid.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because oftentimes with topical or contact allergy, I'll have somebody bring in the product and try to get the ingredients list, and sometimes there's an ingredients list, and sometimes it's very difficult. We just had to chase some dish soap down through looking in some toxic bits of information to find out exactly what was in this product. And once we did, there's very easy to find contact allergens on the internet, but until you know what's in it, you didn't know. And as soon as I got that, it was very clear that there was a very common contact allergen in this product, but we could not find it anywhere on the product or anything that was brought into us, which surprised me. I thought you had to tell us those things.
That's just wrong. I mean, consumers and doctors should be able to have easy access to that information about what's in products, and there's no reason why the companies can't do it, and the Safe Cosmetics Act would require them to. It's one of the big things they're fighting against, though. They don't want to label fragrance chemicals, and they don't want to label the contaminants.
Margaret, you're on line one.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having this program. I really appreciate it. I'm happy to find that there's a website out there I can go look things up on. I spent a lot of time trying to find products without petrochemicals and all sorts of other contaminants in them. And I had a question about mineral foundations. You know, some of those have other items that may not be petrochemicals that could have, you know, their elements from the earth that could be bad for us. And my second thing is more of a question or comment. Would you have any information on why in America we seem to have more of an issue with allowing these chemicals to be in all of our products? Why do we seem to be so slow to respond to this as a whole country? Do you have any data on that?
Great questions, Margaret. First, on the mineral makeup, and we often get this question, I wish I knew more to tell you. The fact is, with mineral makeup, first you'll find a huge range. I mean, some of the products really do have just minerals, and others have minerals plus a whole bunch of synthetic chemicals, so really no different from, you know, a regular blush or foundation. They haven't been tested, though, to my knowledge, and there are concerns about whether mineral makeups have nanoparticle materials and possibly heavy metal contaminations. But at this point, we just don't know. And heavy metals is one of the things that the Safe Cosmetics Act would require a labeling of. So it's a pretty common contaminant. On your other question, why are we so slow in America to regulate toxic chemicals? That's something that's also really fascinated me. You know, I think one of the big reasons is corporate influence over our political system. We just have a campaign finance system that allows companies to have a lot of say over what the government does, much more so than other countries. It's similar with the media. You'll find more media coverage of toxic chemical issues in European countries, for example. And they also have a healthcare system that is universal. And so there are some theories that when you're really looking at having a universal healthcare system that has an incentive for preventing disease, then you'll be in a society that has much more motivation to act in a precautionary way by putting laws in place that regulate chemicals that are thought to be harmful.
Well, thank you very much. I really look forward to when that time happens, and I can't imagine, you know, what corporate person would want their, you know, spouse, whether it's a male or female or their child, to be having these kind of contaminants around them all the time. So it affects them on every level, too. So just surprising. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Margaret.
One brief comment, and then we're going to take our midpoint break here, is that another potential reason is that that we're not supervising enough. There still is in this country a large philosophy that government should be less involved in healthcare and healthcare issues and less supervision, and we're looking very hard right now at how we can control healthcare costs. And this is one of the reasons, an example of a reason why it can be very, very difficult to do that. That's my editorial comment. You're listening to Line One, your health connection in Anchorage. Our number is 550-8433. 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. Our email address is line1@kska.org. We're going to take a short break, then we'll continue to take calls and emails and talk with Stacy Malkin on Line One, your health connection. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
If you missed part of today's program, or if you'd like to listen again to Line 1, Your Health Connection, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking telephone calls. A copy of today's program will be available on our website at kska.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Today, my guest is Stacy Malkin, and we're talking about health safety concerns with personal care products. If you've got questions or comments, you can email those to lineone@kska.org, or you can give us a call at local number 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And remember, if you're listening between 7 and 8, you're listening to a rebroadcast, and we won't be able to take your calls at that time. Let's see. Let's take one of our callers, someone who's been waiting a while. Vicki, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. Great subject, too. I tuned in a little late, and I don't know if you brought this up, but I'm wondering if the your guest would comment on how significant it is that the skin absorbs everything we put on it, and it absorbs it in a highly effective manner. And then also, if she would comment on whether or not our Alaska legislators support or don't support the Safe Cosmetics Act. And I can take my comments off air.
Thank you, Vicki. On skin absorption, yes, the skin is the largest organ in the body, and it is very effective at absorbing certain chemicals. And pharmaceuticals is a good example if you think about the nicotine patch or birth control patch. One of the things about personal care products is many of them also contain penetration enhancer chemicals, which are chemicals that actually have an effect of causing other chemicals to absorb into the skin. So it is a pretty effective route at how some of these chemicals are getting inside our bodies.
All right, let's take another caller. Renee, you're on line one.
I've strayed slightly off topic, but on the mention of formaldehyde, I have heard that aspartame turns into formaldehyde in our bloodstreams. In many locations, I've read that. Is there any truth to that?
I have heard that, and in fact, we've worked with a dermatologist in San Diego who's doing a lot of work on that topic. Her name is Dr. Jacobs, Sharon Jacobs, and she's done studies showing that aspartame and that people can actually come up with a formaldehyde allergy, first of all, through repeated exposures to any type of formaldehyde, and then with subsequent exposures to aspartame, which you'll find in like some children's medicines like Singulair as a sweetener, of course, in many things. And so if a child becomes sensitive, they'll then be sensitive to a whole suite of products containing aspartame or formaldehyde.
Yeah, I'm almost joining a school of thought that there must be elements that are allowing these things in our foods and so on in our products because they may not want us to be in good health. But you know, that's a little out there on the fringe, I know, but it's just it's I don't know how some of this could be allowed if there wasn't an element of that. And it's criminal, really.
It's really anyway. Concerning what's going on, yes, with a lot of the health problems that we're seeing. I agree.
Thank you.
Chelsea, you're on line one.
Hello. I'm calling from Elmendorf Air Force Base, and I do hazardous materials operations, but I am a born and raised Alaskan. And I just found it interesting in going through my material and guidance from the government of what absolutely could not be thrown in, per se, a trash can right next to whiteout bottles, which we don't really use much anymore, was any kind of cosmetics. They consider it a hazardous material that is to be destroyed or discarded as you would any other kind of, like, asbestos-contained material or something on the bases. So, needless to say, when I go to put my war paint on, I think about cosmetics a lot differently nowadays, and trying to do my own research, and I'm an NPR member, and think these are invaluable morsels of information for everybody out there trying to figure it out for ourselves.
Wow, thank you for that. I hadn't heard that about the military bases, but it doesn't surprise me. We did have an event in San Francisco where we invited people to bring old products, and then we had companies there selling good products, and we did have an agreement with the San Francisco City of Department of Hazardous Waste to come and pick all that stuff up.
And that's exactly how they handle it. And out here, I actually see the Hazwoper. I see the, I mean, they put on the Tyvek suits and everything. And every bit of those cosmetics is lumped into that category, period.
And probably cleaning supplies, too.
Oh, yes, ma'am. I have to do MSDS sheets for the crews out here. And just the dish soap liquid, just Windex, 7 pages of material safety data sheet telling you, you don't take a Lysol wipe out of the container and just wipe your kitchen counter. You must follow it with water. People don't know that. I do because I'm reading MSDSs, and I used to work as support for Dr. Woodard in Alaska Regional Hospital, and I am now glad that I don't have children. As an Alaskan, I'm glad that it's just me to figure this out.
Well, thank you for your comments.
I thank you for your effort, and especially the downsizing of government issue, and that they do protect us. That's not the right answer. So thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Alicia, you're on line one.
Hi. I thank you for taking my call. I've been frantically, it was just a fluke kind of a thing that I even turned you guys on. I had to get in the car, actually, to rent something to my daughter at school, and otherwise I wouldn't have been listening. And I'm so grateful that I was. I have a 16-year-old daughter, and she is chronically ill with extremely severe atopic dermatitis. And I've been taking notes like crazy and trying to remember things, and I've been to dermatologists all over the world with her, literally, and to some of the, you know, most, you know, places where people go that are, they think they know the most there about these specific conditions, and trying to figure this out. And we go from one cream to another, from one steroid to another cream to, and it's just these are all the answers to fix what she has. And listening to this, I mean, it's really extremely scary for people who whose lives depend on these products, and all of the things that they put in them are, you know, we're playing cat and mouse here. it sounds like with all of the things that are being put in these products. I thank you for bringing this to light. I consider myself a pretty educated person when it comes to this subject with specifically things that go on skin, and I'm blown away here at what you've had to say. So thank you for bringing that to light, and know that there's people out here who, you know, severely depend on this stuff being exposed. So thank you for your work, and I appreciate it greatly.
Oh, thank you so much. And I am so sorry to hear about your daughter. And if you can find a dermatologist to give a patch allergy test, that would be worth doing. And I have heard of these stories of very similar to yours, where when they finally did this sort of a test, it was revealed that it was some type of allergy that could then be corrected. And so there's hope, and I really wish for you to be able to find that. And you might want to look up Sharon Jacobs, an MD in San Diego, for her work. She's written some papers and also has helped folks in a similar situations.
Well, thank you very much. You've been a wealth of information for me, and I hope for other people out there who have. The lady that was just on said she was grateful she didn't have children, and I do. I have one that is crazy allergic to everything, and you've been hugely, amazingly helpful to me today, and I just thank you so much for that. Thank you for your time.
Oh, well, thank you. You made my day.
Thank you. Take care.
Now, let me just, as a physician, at least make a comment that that we want to keep some perspective here. There are the vast majority of people with atopic dermatitis do fine on the medications that are being used. I'm not defending the medications. I'm just pointing it out. And they do it safely, and they're monitored and controlled by the FDA. Much more critically than it sounds like the cosmetic industry is. And there are no cures for atopic dermatitis, but the presence of allergens to chemicals and foods is a well-appreciated process. So keep in mind that the vast majority of people do okay on these products. Jen, you're on line one.
Thank you for taking my call, Stacy. I am very excited that you are here. I am in the industry. I own a salon, and I am a hairstylist and an esthetician. And my industry has been largely silent in all of this. And as a professional trying to find safer products, it's almost been like we've been met with lots of resistance. So I appreciate that you have such a wonderful database. I am constantly sending clients there. And but as far as my industry is concerned, I mean, the cancer rates in our industry, because we are exposed, you know, 10 times more than the average customer, but no one seems to be thinking about it from that angle at all.
I agree with you that that is a huge issue of concern. And first of all, it can be even more difficult in salons because salon products aren't labeled at all. That's another big loophole in the law and something that the Safe Cosmetics Act would fix. But I think that salon exposures are the biggest concern, and also true that when we look at the Skin Deep database, that we can see that the most toxic types of products are exactly the products used in salons. And that's hair dyes, hair straighteners, hair perms, and then some of the nail products, acrylics and such. So there are very little in the way of studies being done on worker populations. But as you mentioned, there are some evidence of higher rates of cancer, particularly bladder cancer, among people working with hair dye over the long term. And there's a great report also out by a group called Women's Voices for the Earth about the occupational studies that have been done on the nail worker population, and they show that not much has been done, but the evidence that is there is really shows cause for concern, and a lot of anecdotal evidence about people not feeling well or needing to take breaks or feeling dizzy, etc. So there are a lot of high chemical exposures going on in those environments.
Well, you'll find that the government almost fights us. Like, they don't want to make safer products, but I was working for a major manufacturer, and I was shocked to find they make all our color in Canada, but they make a separate formula for Europe that they do for the U.S., and we can't get the one from Europe. It's safer, it's better, only we can't get it because they don't have to. All the chemical companies are relying on them to be using those chemicals. So, and they fight us on getting safer products into the country. So it needs to be changed. We haven't, you know, we came from a time when they didn't even know things absorbed into your skin. And now I see huge amounts of scalp issues and lots of things that are, they get better when people stop using sodium lauryl sulfate. So, I mean, we need to change how we regulate things.
I totally agree, and I thank you for raising this issue because, like I said, I think it is one of the most important things that we really have to be looking at, the salon populations, who do tend to be women of childbearing age.
We have insurance. Well, we don't have insurance.
Right. So, you know, in the meantime, good ventilation is really important, taking frequent breaks, things like that, and really important that we get this bill passed and get salon products labeled and require companies to get rid of the chemicals they've already gotten rid of in Europe.
Are you familiar with the issue that they're having right now with the straightening product?
Yeah, the Brazilian blowout scandal. That's a really important story, and I'm glad you brought that up. Brazilian blowout is a very popular high-end hair straightening product labeled as formaldehyde-free, and they were getting a lot of complaints about allergic reactions, and the University of Oregon tested the product and found out it contained 10% formaldehyde, this supposedly formaldehyde-free product. Now, the Health Canada, within a week, had done its own tests, which confirmed the findings, and they started pulling the products from salons. But it's still being used in the U.S. The FDA has done nothing so far, but the state of California is suing that company now under the Safe Cosmetics Act of 2005, which we helped to pass. So, you know, we'll see. That's an unfolding saga, and the company is still claiming it's not a problem.
Well, I will tell you, they had an extremely aggressive sales campaign. They were calling salons directly, which normally we get products from our local distributor. And I had them repeatedly calling me. And I was like, I don't want your product. I know what's in it. And they still kept calling.
That doesn't surprise me. It's so interesting. You think you might get a reaction of, you know, apology or chagrin. Oops, our formaldehyde-free product is actually 10% formaldehyde. But no, they're, as you said, being really aggressive. They're suing Oregon OSHA. They're continuing to say there's not really formaldehyde in there. You know, people are making a lot of money off that product. That's the bottom line. It's $300, $400 a treatment, and the company and some salons are just not willing to give it up.
Well, it seems to me that, you know, if it's not going to hurt you instantly right now, which is what our industry is all about, I mean, it's repeated exposure. It's not just one time. It's a repeated exposure that your body becomes, you know, after a while, it can't take it.
Right.
So, I mean, we have to change it. And I just want you to know we are here and we are, I'm not going away. I am going to be as loud as I possibly can. Every time I see anything marketing-wise, there was a product, I believe it was a BioCell product. It had a little kid with cancer. I looked up the ingredients. I saw everything that was in it, and I called the company. I said, how dare you use that in your ad? I never got a call back from the chemist that was going to call me, but at least I got to let them know that people see it.
Good for you. I think that's really important. Calling companies, letting them know your concern, all of us doing that is really going to be what makes the impact. And I also hope all of you listening out here can come tonight to the Anchorage Museum, 7 o'clock. I'm going to be giving a presentation and talking a lot more about the ugly side of the beauty industry. So 7 o'clock at the Anchorage Museum.
I will absolutely be there to get my book signed that I've had as my Bible for the last 4 years. So I'm very excited to meet you. Thank you so much, and I will see you later.
Great. I think you emailed me, Jen. We were talking about you earlier. We loved your comments on my blog.
Yeah, I'm telling you, we need to just be as loud as possible. And I think not enough of us on this side of the industry have been able to stand up and really say, no, I'm not going to buy into selling people things that will cause harm down the road. That's why I changed everything about how I do my business. And you're either going to take it and change it, or, you know, you're going to succumb to the pressure of marketing, and I'm just not going to do it. So we're going to be loud. That's all I can say.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, we've got a number of callers. I'm going to apologize right now. We're not going to be able to get to all of you. We'll do our best. We've got quite a few emails. Here's an email that we received that says, I find it difficult in Alaska to find accessible and affordable chemical-free products. I get most of mine from an online source called Pure Complexions. It's a great website, sells only chemical-free products. So can we use this as an opportunity to talk about, are there any products that are safe? and what about some companies that you might recommend?
So the great news is there really are some excellent products out there that work just as well, if not better, than the conventional stuff in most product categories. I think there's still some areas where the industry has some innovation to do on the hair coloring and hair straighteners. But for the most part, a lot of the toxicity concerns have already been figured out. The challenge is you have to do some research to find them. We do have a pledge that we've asked companies to sign to guarantee that they don't use chemicals banned in Europe, among other commitments. And there are two companies here in Alaska that have signed our pledge, and that's Alpenglow and DK Mud. AK Mud and Alpenglow. And, so those are two choices here locally. In addition, of course, a lot of products are available online, and there's so many of them, I hesitate to start just naming brands because there are others I won't name, be able to get to. But I think really the best thing to do is go to the Skin Deep database, safecosmetics.org. And if you look up shampoo, it will show you all of the shampoos in the database, 1,300 of them, listed from least to most toxic. So there are many, many screens of products that rank a 0 to 2 with green circles that are among the best products that you can find with the least toxicity.
All right, we got another caller. Vicki, you're on line one.
Hi, yeah, I'm back. I was wondering if your guest would take a little bit of time and talk about how our state legislators are in support or not in support of this Safe Cosmetics Act, and then also to kind of mirror what the previous caller was saying is what can a general consumer do to help promote and push this bill through? to get it passed.
Well, thank you for coming back, and I want to apologize because I forgot to answer that the first time around. And I'm going to let Garen take that because she works with the local legislators.
Okay, and I'll go offline and take the answer.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Vicki. That's a great question. And we have not had the opportunity to work with Alaska legislators on any topics related to safe cosmetics or product labeling, but what we are doing is working with them on other legislation related to toxic exposures, and for very much the same reasons that the chemicals and the products we're working on are associated with a number of adverse health effects, reproductive health issues, neurodevelopmental issues. And so that's where we're really trying to focus. We have a couple of bills in the legislature right now, House Bill 63 and Senate Bill 27. Don't want to take too much time now, but if you want to look those up, that's where a lot of our effort is going right now. If we had the capacity and the multi-billion dollar budget of some of these other companies, we'd be taking it all on. Sadly, we don't, and so we're trying to kind of keep up as much as we can, but right now those are two bills we're working on, and hopefully this is an opportunity to start the conversation, build the knowledge base among legislators and staff about these issues. And I think what's exciting is that we're seeing some folks motivated by learning this information. And so, of course, learning is key, and that's what we're really trying to do right now. Feel free to contact either of our organizations for more information about how to get involved with that effort, and thank you.
Yeah, and I just want to say, following up on that, these organizations, the Alaska Community Action on Toxics and Alliance for Reproductive Justice, are excellent ways to get engaged in these issues locally, and I think that's really what it's going to take, is building a movement community by community to put pressure on legislators at the state level, municipal level, and ultimately the federal level to make changes that require companies to be protective and precautionary about the products they put on the market.
Stu, you're on line one.
Thanks. Stacy, I'm building a cabin, and I have pretty bad skin conditions for life, basically. And anyhow, we got glue lam, plywood, scatterboard. I've been told that if I paint these things on both sides, it will keep the formaldehyde and the likes from seeping out. Is that true? And could you recommend a superior paint for that purpose?
Mm. I don't know if that's true, and I am not a good source of information on paints either. Sorry about that.
Mm. So is there any website or anything that might be available for finding out some way to do this better than...
Well, with the formaldehyde, I know there's a company called Columbia Forest Products, I think it is, that is making formaldehyde-free particle board products. I actually wrote about them in my book. They came up with a formaldehyde-free glue that was based on... a muscle, actually. It was a biomimicry inspiration where they mimicked the protein-based glue that a muscle uses to stick to rocks and figured out a way to make formaldehyde, to make a glue that works as well as the formaldehyde stuff without the formaldehyde. So I would say you might want to look into some of those alternative wood products for your house if that's an option for you.
Okay, thank you.
Another email, since you've studied toxins in baby shampoos, what about disposable diapers and wipes? Are there chemicals that we should be concerned about?
We have not looked. We do have information about some wipes in our report, and you can find that report on our website, safecosmetics.org/toxic-tub. And so there's lots of information there about which products we tested, what we found. Diapers we have not looked at. But that would be an interesting study to see if anything's leaching out of them. I suppose it would depend on the material, what kinds of plastics they're using.
And another email, is lanolin a preferable emollient to other natural moisturizers? Are there certain emollients that are better for others if someone's trying to avoid petroleum-based products?
Lanolin, I don't know much about. But that's something you can also look up ingredients and chemicals in Skin Deep. Just type in the ingredient, and it will tell you what's known and what the government sources say about it. And now, a lot of this stuff, I have to say, though, hasn't been studied, and especially a lot of the natural botanicals. But overall, that was one of the big problems when putting together the information on Skin Deep, is because safety assessments haven't been required, there's a lot that's not known about the particular chemicals used in products.
And do know that at times lanolin has been incriminated as a topical allergen. I'm not saying that it's a toxic chemical, but an allergen. David, you're on line one.
Oh, great. Thanks, Dad. I just wanted to bring the conversation back to the issue of how business agendas really conflict with our health. And there are a couple of things that came to mind. One of your callers was just shocked to imagine that a business concern would want to expose us to chemicals. And Terry Gross did a great interview with the New York Times writer and talked about David H. Koch and his involvement with formaldehyde-based products.
Mm-hmm.
And he himself had been a cancer victim. So there's a great example. If anybody wants to go and find that online, just go to npr.org and look at Fresh Air's archives, and you can find that interview. And then the other point that I would make is Michael Moore's recent movie on capitalism, A Love Story. It really does open our eyes to how business agendas don't jive at all with our health agenda or our economy or really anything else. And we really are up against a bulwark of challenges to see a society where really our interests are looked at. So that's the comment that I had, Thad. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, David. I heartily recommend both of those sources of info. And what's going on with the Koch brothers is particularly really chilling. And David Koch was on the National Advisory Panel that was looking at formaldehyde at a time when they were also a major manufacturer of formaldehyde, the Koch brothers conglomerate there. So definitely look up what's going on with the Kochs, K-O-C-H.
We've only got a couple of minutes, actually a minute and a half or so. Why don't you take this time just to sum up your concerns, and let me apologize again for not reaching all of the callers and emails today.
Well, I really hope that folks can come out to the Anchorage Museum tonight at 7 p.m., and we're going to have a discussion there. We'll take lots more questions, and I would just like to say in closing that I really do see a lot of reason for hope. I think that people are becoming aware that there really is a movement building, that there's huge support behind federal and local chemical reforms. And I think I just really urge folks to get engaged in those fights, speak out, lobby your legislators. Together, we can change this. We can give the beauty industry a makeover, as I like to say. And I think that's just a first step. You know, it really makes sense to start with, let's not put carcinogens on our bodies, but we need to also get them out of all consumer products and get them out of commerce, period. So please, again, come to the museum tonight, check out our website, safecosmetics.org, and let's keep the conversation going.
Okay. Thanks very much for taking the time to be with us today. It's been a real pleasure to meet you and to hear about your comments.
Thanks so much for having me, Dr. Woodard. I loved it.
Okay. My personal thanks to Stacy Malkin, who's the award-winning author again of Not Just a Pretty Face, The Ugly Side of the Beauty Industry, and co-founder of the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics. Line 1 is going to return next week. Our guests will be a trio of Anchorage physicians, Drs. George Reinier, Rich Neubauer, and Tom Hunt. Why don't you join us next Monday afternoon, February 14th at 2 p.m., we'll be having our next edition of Line 1, Your Health Connection, and we'll examine health care for seniors in Alaska. We've touched on it before. This time we're going to talk about some important changes that are coming down and will be important for all of us reaching those elder ages to know about. Pat Yek is Vice President of APTI News and Public Media. Kristen Spack engineered today's program. Thanks very much for listening, especially those of you who took the time to call and email. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1, Your Health Connection is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available on our website at kska.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.